This is part two of topic one, and I'd ask you to turn to page 5 of your workbook, and we'll discuss learning curves and the implications of learning curves for coaching effectiveness. We'll talk about some research. That research is, once again, the graph that we looked at in the previous section of this topic on page 11. Please turn to that page in your workbook. The data depicted in Kruger's graph there are actually performance curves. And there has always been a controversy in psychology as to whether performance and learning are different things. That doesn't affect us as coaches. But when we talk about learning, we actually talk about changes in performance, and the two are considered to be similar, and the academic differences are irrelevant for us. What is depicted in figure 1 here are performance curves for 4 different tasks. The performance changes at 9 feet vary in the early stages of the 100 trials of acquisition that were provided. Performance has improved, got worse, but in the latter part of the trials, performance was steady, although marginal. A similar shape of acquisition curve occurred at 6 feet. So we can see that in the early stages of learning, performances vary. Some good performances, some poor performances. But in the latter stages of learning, performance become relatively consistent and show improvement. If you'd now turn to page 13 in your workbook, let us look at figure 2. This is an hypothetical depiction of the various stages of learning of which we should be aware if we're coaching young people. There are 6 stages of learning that are depicted here. Most theoretical models have fewer stages, but those models usually only apply to part of a performance curve. Let us now consider the stages in this model that's before you. The first stage is an initial period of getting used to the environment and equipment. This is not considered in any academic models, but it is a common observation of children or adults who are learning a completely new activity. Until one adapts to the equipment and the environment so that it doesn't distract their learning of the skills which should be performed, we get very little change in performance. The second stage is a development of a cognitive plan to do the particular skill. At this stage, the learner works out what it is they have to do to perform the task. It's a general cognitive plan that usually involves in the sequence of things that need to be done, how the activity is started and finished, and some vague idea of what goal should be achieved. No attention is paid at this particular time about individual technique items. The third stage is one where the athlete starts to attend to the actual skill that's being performed. A plan is developed of how to do the skill. That plan may not involve all the important elements of the skills, but they are elements that the athlete will attempt to control. During this stage, performance improvement becomes relatively rapid because it is the first time when athletes really are trying to change elements of the skill. The central feature of this stage is that athletes are thinking about their performance and attending to the elements that are under consideration. There is a great amount of thought involvement and control in this stage. The fourth stage is somewhat of a transition stage. The elements developed in stage 3 now become much more automatic and the amount of thinking involved in them is reduced. However, also at this stage, further elements are introduced, so there's kind of a mix of stage 3 and stage 4 occurring together. However, this is the first stage whereby skills are becoming somewhat automated and less thinking is involved. The fifth stage is the overlearning stage. This is where skill elements are automated and an individual just keeps practicing them, focusing on the outcomes, and occasionally returning to booster sessions of the control elements which are required. Of course, there's a mix between stages 3, 4, and 5 as elements in a multi-elemented skill are at different stages of learning. Once a skill is learned, so that's at an automatic level, if the skill is stopped, performance deteriorates. But what has been learned and what performances have been changed never deteriorate back to a non-learned stage. So we get performance reduction, but you do not get performance elimination. This is why when an individual learns to ride a bike, they can always ride a bike. Or learn to do any particular skill, can always do a skill after being away from that skill for many years. These are the stages of learning that we quite often confront when we approach teaching young people how to do skills that are appropriate for a sport. If you return to page 5 of the workbook, we'll look at the implications of learning in sports. The first implication is that in current coaching, it is not likely that a learner gets beyond the fuzz phase, the first stage of learning, before they are put into competition. One has to question, is that fair? You put young people into a competitive setting where they have neither the skills nor the practice experience in being able to do what is going to be required of them when they are compared to other young people. In concert with the first section on task difficulty, many trials are required to get past a diminished learning stage where the activity will become enjoyable. Performing skilled activities only becomes enjoyable when you're in the fourth or latter stages. The fourth implication is that where skills are involved, one can never achieve a maximum. One should always expect improvements. There are studies in motor learning which are still proceeding and have been going on for 50 years, looking at skills such as cigar rolling in Cuba, and still find that people well into their 60s are improving with the precision and the reduction in errors of developing those particular activities. We have many examples of very fine musicians being at their zenith when they're in their 60s or 70s. So skill-dominated sports are likely to be activities that will benefit most from working on skill learning factors. An aside to these three implications is that coaches need to individualize their coaching forms and approaches to learning skills to account for individual differences. One should not infer or assume that all athletes will learn a particular skill the same way. This completes part 2 of topic 1.